So we got Albert and Kenny and Don and Llewellyn and Ross and myself. So the idea tonight is just to touch base. I'm working off of our touch base with ideas about time and how our understanding about time as taught by the course can sometimes, Jesus says some absolutely astounding things that we're asked to take on, you know, faith or face value until we get through more of the course and start to learn, hey, you know what, this is actually really working out, you know, to be true in my experience and in my life. So I like to look for multiple ways to confirm good ideas. And one of the ways I like to do that is there are great ideas in modern physics about time and space and change. And we'll just look at time tonight because time gets a lot more emphasis, as Llewellyn was pointing out, than space.
Oh, Luke, my name is Luann.
Luann, I'm sorry. I see L-O-U-E.
Yeah, that's a combination of Luann and my last name, Ellison.
So what I thought I would do is I'm working off of a web browser that's open to something called acim.org. And if you go there, you can read anything from the text or anything from the lessons or the special chapters at the end. And I plunked in the word time, and I was joking earlier, I got a whopping 988 results back for the word time in the Course in Miracles, front to cut back, and that it might be a little hard to get through it all tonight. So what I want to do is I just want to start with the text and work our way from the two mentions and the introduction and then chapter one and chapter two. And I'll go around and have everybody read a sentence or two and share any thoughts you might have. And to make it easier for people who don't have the book accessible and I can't give you the page, what I'm going to do is I'm going to flip up a share screen. And you'll be able to see my web browser and read what it is I'm looking for. And the words are highlighted in orange, the word time. So it's really easy to pick them off when you look at it. So let me start the share screen share. And then you'll have to tell me whether it comes up.
It's up on mine.
Okay, so I'll go right to the beginning. There we go. So you see text, introduction?
Uh-huh.
Right. Llewellyn, do you want to read first five verses?
First five sentences?
First five sentences, yeah.
This is a Course in Miracles. It is a required course. Only the time you take it is voluntary. Free will does not mean that you can establish the curriculum. It means only that you can elect what you want to take at a given time.
So I was struck by the fact that you don't get into but the third sentence, and already we're on the first reference to time. And I was like, oh, okay. I wasn't quite aware of that. What does that mean for you, if anything? What do you take away from
that little bit?
Yeah. There's a fair bit of meaning there.
Well, basically what it means for me is I have to sit down and read the book and learn my lessons, do it as it's told, and I just need to have the patience and take the time to do it.
And we get a definition for free will, too.
Will means I get to do it when I want to do it, and if I have the time to do it, feel like I have the time to do it. Free will means I don't have to do it in 365 days. In fact, the first time through took me 2.5 years, and I was doing it every day.
So, yeah, that works for me, too. Next reference is still in the introduction. And that was sentence 5. So now we're into chapter 1. So you should be able to see chapter 1 and paragraph 15. And Ross, would you do me the favor of just reading the whole thing?
Paragraph 15?
Yes, sir.
Each day should be devoted to miracles. The purpose of time is to enable you to learn how to use time constructively. It is thus a teaching device and a means to an end. Time will cease when it is no longer useful in facilitating learning.
Anything strike you about that?
Well, just the previous mention of time. When I read that, I take it to mean everybody. Whether you've read the course or not, your job is to wake up. And so you're going to learn the lessons from A Course in Miracles, whether you read the book or not. Because everybody's got to wake up. Of course, there is no everybody. There's only one. So when the one wakes up, whether it's reading the course or not, that one utilizes time to wake up.
So
it can't be only people that read the course.
Read somewhere in the book that
that's so circular.
I read somewhere in the book that everybody has a path to what the ACIM is giving us, but they may have a different path. And I think we might be seeing people alive today in our dream that don't seem like they're on that path, but they are in some form.
Yeah.
And then there's, of course, different ways of being spiritual too. And those people are also on a path that will get them there eventually.
And then I'm always struck by how Jesus is so seamlessly able to talk about the many and then pull it back into the one, which I'm not able to do, because obviously that even though we're talking about people who aren't reading the course, well, of course, everybody's getting that material because there's only one Son of God. So there's only one. And it's just hard to get those levels to just jive so seamlessly as Jesus does.
I have a question.
Yeah.
He says you can't choose the curriculum. I think that's what Luann read.
Uh-huh.
But there are different paths, and I'm trying to understand how that it seemed to me like different paths might have a different curriculum. Maybe a good definition of curriculum might help. Maybe.
Yeah. But Ross, you seem to have a good handle on this. What would you say for that?
Well, you're either waking up or you're asleep. So the curriculum is waking up to the fact that there's only one Son of God. You know, to use a metaphor, one Son of God who's already resting comfortably in the arms of God. So you have to go back to, you know, and I always say reset. When you get confused, like I am right now, go back to God is, and then we cease to speak. There's only one. So that's your reset. And then you go down, okay, well, here we are talking about many, many people. All right. Well, I understand that I'm down on the ladder of the ego in the dream because I'm talking about people, plural. So, or a curriculum, plural. There's only one curriculum. There's only one Son of God. And that's the tricky, tricky part, is talking on the level of people and realizing that there's only one. Realizing there's only one curriculum, only one Son of God, only one ego. So it all boils down to one in the end. And that's the tricky part.
So if you're on a path of Buddhism or Christianity or Judaism, the curriculum is still waking up.
Yeah, and who is the person that you're referring to who's on that path?
Well, Don, and you guys can correct me if you understand differently. I'm pretty clear that the course says at some point, hey, listen, there's a bunch of different ways to get to what Ross is talking about, that one idea that's, you know, waking up and the reset, God is. And they are more useful to some people at some points in some cultures and, you know, even some lifetimes if you want to play around with that idea. And that the Course in Miracles is our pathway. It's the one that, you know, has come into our lives, and it has a special advantage for us as students. And the advantage is it's fast. It compresses time very constructively, very efficiently compared to some other paths, which will get you to the goal in the end. You know, and what probably matters a great deal is how sincerely do you desire to get to that goal, you know? But there's, you know, lots and lots and lots of philosophies and theologies, and they're more or less efficient at getting you through all of the fluff and stuff and nonsense that goes along with culture and ignorance, and then cutting through all of that and just doing it very efficiently. The course is a big book, and it's a little funny to refer to it as a shortcut, but it really is. That's my experience. Don, I was born Christian. My dad was a Lutheran minister. I know the Christian. I go to church on Zoom every morning to this cathedral in Manhattan called Cathedral of St. John the Divine. So I read the Psalms and the, you know, some of the Old Testament and the New Testament, and I look at the metaphors that are in there that teach the idea that God is, and then we stop speaking and we work on waking up from the dream. And I can see that truth embedded in the culture and the literature from there. I've also been a long time student of Buddhism. And I've studied it formally, and that's a somewhat different way of expressing the same ideas. But again, with Buddhism, you know, the course even mentions here, you know, some people spend their entire life getting ready to have their moment of clarity and waking, and then they finally get it. But it took the entire lifetime, you know, because that's what they were taught it takes. You can't do it any faster than that. But, and what Jesus says in the course is, hey, good news, folks, this is the fast way. In Buddhism, you would call it, I forgot. Excuse me for referencing and forgetting the word. But there are slow ways to do things in Buddhism and faster ways, hidden ways, secret ways. And the reason they're hidden or secret is because they can be misunderstood, and they can actually drag you down if they're misunderstood, if they're not, you know, taught well. And so that's why I like the course the best of all of it. Or at least I, you know, it's very central to any other learning system that I approach. I'm really struck by the last sentence in this paragraph 15. It's sentence 4, time will cease when it's no longer useful in facilitating learning. Huh? It's going to cease? You know, I didn't learn that in grade school, that time stops. I was sort of taught that it goes on forever. But here we're getting a new idea, at least for classical teaching and Western teaching in classrooms, is time, you know, we agree that it might have had a starting point at the Big Bang, but we also think in terms of it goes on absolutely forever in one direction only. And here we're getting information that says, start to think about it differently already, you know, beginning of chapter one. Time will cease. So we'll look at that and on the science side a little bit more. Let's see. Albert, are you up for reading? Can you read the screen?
Sure.
Okay. So we're at paragraph 19 now. Go ahead and read the whole thing.
Miracles make minds one in God. They depend on cooperation between the sonships in the sum of all that God created. Miracles, therefore, reflect the laws of eternity, not of time. I wanted to say that I have been thinking about time, about whether time exists, and right now I'm kind of between the point of yes and no. I believe that God created everything that was created forever and, you know, infinite and forever in all directions. He created that in an instant. But then God would like to experience his creation, and that's what humans are, our purpose is. So God can experience his creation, but we can't experience it like that. So we have to understand that we experience God's creation sequentially, and that is called time. So the question is whether God created both. And my thought is that yes, in truth of the creation was made without time, but it's experienced in time.
Gotcha. The first sentence in this paragraph is miracles make minds one in God. And that's what Ross was saying, you know, a number of times in a row. When you start to get lost, go back and touch home plate. You know, oneness in God. Minds are one in God. And Albert, what you're saying is in the second sentence, they depend on cooperation because the sonship, that's got the feeling of multiplicity built into it, is the sum of all God created. You know, a sum is a bunch of things added together. So that's by definition more than one. And miracles are defined as collapsing the need for time. Right? That's part of what makes them so extraordinary in this level two experience that we're having. You know, I am an ego. I am a body. You are someone other than myself. This is me. This is not me. All of that gets corrected eventually by the Force. Once you have a miracle, then the miracle is a way of sort of, if you imagine time as a timeline, you take a scissors and you cut at one point and you cut at a second point a little farther down line and you pull the two remaining bits together and splice them. And now you don't need as much time to get to the point where the dream ends and you step out of belief in time. You know? And that fits with the earlier paragraph, which said, hey, listen, time doesn't really exist. I'll step out into science a little bit more. This character is, his name is Max Planck, P-L-A-N-C-K. And he was a good German scientist at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th. So let's call this photo about 1900, because that's when he was publishing his best scientific papers. And he was working on a problem. They thought they had figured out all of physics for all time at this point, about 1899. A guy named Lord Kelvin, that's the Kelvin scale, the thermometer scale, who is an English scientist, he said, you know what? We figured it all out. Everything else is just filling in the chinks and the little pieces, but physics is basically a done deal. And then they started to realize there was a problem. If you heated up something like an iron ball, it would first feel warm and then it would begin to glow red and then get yellow hot and then white hot and then blue hot. And then it would actually turn into colors that you can't see with your naked eye, but they're still there, like ultraviolet. And when they were doing the math about how much energy had to come off of each square centimeter of your round iron ball, when you get to ultraviolet, the math goes to infinity. You need more energy than you can possibly pack into a square centimeter of anything. And they called it the ultraviolet catastrophe because they couldn't explain it. It didn't fit into physics. And so he was working on that problem, and he came up with the realization that energy is not perfectly smooth that goes from zero energy to some incredibly high level of energy, and it can be evenly subdivided. It comes in chunks, and only he called the chunks quanta, Q-U-A-N-T-A. It's where you get the word quantum physics. And he said, oh, light coming off of a hot iron ball, or black body is another word that they use in physics for the same idea, black body radiation, it comes off in only such a size, and it can't get any smaller than that. And when you did the math, that fixed the problem. But it had some really, really interesting consequences. One of which is that if you've got discrete units of energy that can't be broken down anymore, you also have discrete units of time. And he began to realize that in his papers that you have a smallest possible unit of time. And time itself doesn't get subdivided like they thought energy was. And then space has a smallest unit, and so on. And so there's a Planck time and a Planck length and a Planck energy unit. And this is quantum mechanics. This is quantum physics. And the smallest unit of time, I looked it up, is astonishingly small, mind you. It's not anything you would notice or that human beings could notice. It takes a physicist with an atomic clock to pick it up. But the smallest unit of time is 10 to the negative 44 seconds. That's about a trillion, trillion, trillion billionths of a second. Okay? That's a very small amount of time. But you can't divide it any finer than that. So time has a limit. That's a new idea. It fits in with what the course is teaching, right? Space has a limit. I'll keep talking about time for a second. They started to learn some interesting side effects of this in the 20th century. I'll blow this up because it's way too small. These are two dudes at the National Institutes of Standards and Time in Fort Collins, Colorado. Broadcasting on a frequency, you may have heard it, you know, it's where the atomic clock beep comes out of. And they're standing in front of the first atomic clock. It's like 1959 and the year. And it makes me chuckle to see that they've got an analog clock dial up there, you know, with a second hand sweeping round. And we're talking about units of time that are astonishingly small. But for the first time, they had a clock that wouldn't lose even a second over a few million years, right? They were big and bulky like the first computers, right? And then they've now gotten so good at building these atomic clocks that this is what the most modern ones look like. And they wouldn't lose a second over most of the age of the universe. That's 13 billion years plus. It's hard to fit this on your wrist, you know. You can't walk out the door with it, but it's extraordinarily accurate. And more to the point, you can build them smaller, and they're still very, very good. And you can sync them up so they're running at exactly the same time relative to each other. And when you do that, and then you split the clocks up, really cool things begin to happen that violate all our usual ideas about time. So one of them is, if, let me blow this one up too, if you take a clock and you have synchronized watches, you and a buddy, and one of you begins to get in an airplane and fly around the world with your synchronized watch, and the other one stays in the laboratory and waits for the plane to land after it's gone all the way around the globe, and then you compare the time on the two. Are they still exactly synchronized? And the answer is nope. Every time what happens, that's not a joke. Every time what happens is the clock that's traveling seems to go experience time more slowly. So when it comes back and they compare it, it's actually behind. The clock that stayed in the laboratory managed to get ahead. And only an atomic clock could tell you this. A wristwatch isn't accurate enough to do it. So here's these two guys who came up with this idea and tested it. And they've got two atomic clocks. This is one. That's the other. And there are a Boeing 747. And they literally took these two clocks. There were two more in a laboratory. Why two? I'll explain it in a second. They flew these clocks all the way around the globe, came back to the laboratory, compared them to the ones that never took a trip, and lo and behold, both of these clocks were perfectly in sync with each other. They had never separated. They both took the trip. They both went fast for a while. And the other two in the laboratory were also perfectly in sync. They went nowhere together. But these two were exactly the same amount now behind. They were younger clocks than they would have been if they had just been left in place.
Tim, I am beginning to wonder how this related to the ACIM talk about time.
So here's why I see the comparison. What we're being told is that time doesn't exist, or that time can be collapsed. So we just read about how miracles reflect the laws of eternity, not time. And the function of a miracle is to shorten the need for time. And that's an idea that goes against the grain of the usual physics as we think of it. This is experimental proof that what's being said in the course is, in fact, also our best understanding of how time is in reality. Did that help a little bit?
A little bit, but how would that relate to, I read years ago that Einstein didn't believe there was such a thing as time. And I would, that felt, when I started reading the course, that felt right to me. If his explanation is there's no such thing as time, then when the book says we're using time in order to have the miracles that we need in order to wake up, but then once that happens, we don't need time anymore.
Maybe you can think of it this way, and it would be useful. And others, please jump in. Einstein was right. And the abolishment of time, or the recognition that time doesn't exist in the way that we think it does, or even at all, is correct from the point of view of quantum physics, of the modern physics. It's also correct from the point of view of level one Course in Miracles. And it's really important to keep track of level one and level two as we go through this evening. Because in level one, yeah, time is totally abolished. It's gone. But as long as we seem to be having the experience of level two, the illusion, the failure to wake up yet, or the not having woken up yet, seemingly, then we do have to play around with time. And that's why the Holy Spirit introduces the time splicing, the miracle. Miracles abolish the need for as much time. Yeah, Don. And I see Ross has got a hand up.
I think about 4 decades ago, I had started A Course in Miracles, but I was just in that kind of stage of waking up, if you will. And I think I experienced what I now, from what you're talking about, would call a collapse of time. Yeah, I was, I don't go into the whole story, but it was just this phenomenal experience I was working and I was, how to explain it briefly. It just that I came home on the way to from the office to go out and pick somebody up to continue in my work. And I was experiencing a lot of stress. So anxiety, because I think I was in the midst of this changes that were going on and I didn't know what was going on, but, I made myself some lunch and I was kind of late to pick up this person. And I made myself some lunch and I ate my lunch and then I looked at the clock and I felt like I thought I had been home like about, 10 or 15 minutes. And it was as if only a minute had passed. And then I went on from there. About a half hour of time, I was in this state where it seemed as if I was driving my car, but it seemed as if I wasn't driving my car. It was going, the lights were changing automatically, and I got this person to this meeting. It was a student, a high school student, getting them to an internship interview. Anyway, the point is, I got them there on time, and in order to do that, it seems as if time was collapsed. And it was, and it had a beginning, which was at my house. And as soon as I got this young woman into the building and sat down, it seemed like time came back into my normal experience of time. Yeah. So I'd say a miracle occurred in order to facilitate something that the divine wanted for this person that I was facilitating getting into a medical internship. Yeah. I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
So your perception of time was ordinary and then absent from your awareness or your perception, or altered at the very least, and then returned to your ordinary perception again.
Yeah, that, and also it seemed as if all the lights turned just when they needed to turn for us to continue on our journey and facilitate a safe landing, so to speak. So it was time and it was space. And I think there is a place in the Course that Jesus says, if you're on purpose, all time and space can be rearranged to facilitate, I guess, your success or something to that effect.
Right.
And that was what I experienced. I wish I could say I experienced that now. I don't think I'm necessarily on purpose. Not that I was consciously on purpose at the time, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. My understanding from the Course teaching is that we don't whistle up miracles on command.
Yeah.
That they're given to us. We can get used to using them or even expecting them, but they're not ours to dictate because we're not high enough up the ladder. We don't see it from Jesus' POV, and therefore we don't have the big picture.
And I guess I would say that they're not to be used in a self-serving manner. They're to facilitate the God's plan for salvation. And I you know, I can only cooperate with that. I can't make it up, so to speak.
That works for me. Ross, what do you have to say?
So the only way to experience time is if you are experiencing change. So in other words, two things the Course teaches that are, you know, another rock for me to hang on to is that we are unchangeable and eternal. And so those two things make time meaningless. Because if your true identity is here for eternity, meaning there is no start, as you mentioned, the Big Bang, that never happened. There is no Big Bang. Eternity means that there is no start to it, there's no end to it, and there's no middle. So that's why it's the now. And so that's eternity. And then we're unchangeable. As the one Son of God, we are unchangeable. So what if you're eternal and unchangeable, time is meaningless. So there's another reset for, at least for me, it works for me, you know, that one, unchangeable and eternal, those three things make time and space meaningless.
Time and space are meaningless in level one awareness.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how I would refer
to the ultimate truth.
Work for you. Yeah. And if you're experiencing change, there has to be time. And neither yes. one of those are level one. They're level two.
They're in the dream.
Dream.
Yep. That we are supposed to eventually wake up from, but as the Course teaches us with, you know, their metaphor is God reaches down his metaphorical hand and pulls us up into that experience of unchangeability and eternity.
We can get to the lawns of heaven.
Right.
With hard
you can't
work.
Mow the lawn.
Right. But I think the term lawns of heaven is actually in the Course material. And then, you know, it's God that has to take the final step. Right. So let's go on to the next. Oh, you know what? I'll throw this up now too, because Ross, you just referenced the Big Bang. Can you guys see this? Is it big enough on your screens or not? You don't have to read it. It's just a graphic made up by some nice people at the BBC, you know, who are good at this sort of thing, that shows what we believe, you know, what science currently thinks of as the beginning of time. You know, what came before the Big Bang? Well, we don't know. And so scientists come up with this sort of a flat, not so great answer of, well, that the question is meaningless. There, what you can't ask what happened before Big Bang because there was no time before the Big Bang. That one doesn't work so well for me. And then there's this period where, you know, as you go from left from Big Bang all the way over to this black side on the far right, you go from the very beginning of time to not the end of time, but everything gets so far away from everything else because the universe is forever expanding that you can't even see another star. They've all moved so far apart from each other. And life as we know it is long gone. And even the stars are dead and black holes evaporate and all that kind of stuff. So this is the timeline, and it's a partial understanding at best compared to what the Course gives us, you know, which is an understanding that this is an illusion and that what we're going to do is step out of it. We're going to wake up from it. And Luann, like you said, I'm not sure. Yeah, I think it was you. Einstein didn't, you know, he had problems with this. And part of it is that time isn't experienced the same way by any two of us. It's the clocks again. You know how else you can make two atomic clocks go out of sync? not just move one of them quickly. You can just simply take, if they're on the same shelf, take one and put it on the floor, 4 feet lower. Wait a couple of days, put them back together and compare the times. The one that's higher up, farther away from the center of Earth, time goes slower for that one. The one that's farther down, time goes faster for it. Is that true for people too? If we're sitting on the same shelf and I go and sit on the floor and you stay up there and we come back together, if you had a way to measure that, you would be a little younger. You know, if we were identical twins, then I am now. Go ahead, Don.
So wouldn't that explain what happened in that experiment where they put the atomic clocks on the plane, on the airplanes?
It does in part. Thank you for bringing that up. There's two things that change time relative from one clock to another or one person to another. One of them is relative motion, and I say relative because there's no great one starting point that's universal for all things and all people. So if I make my clock move relative to yours faster, then the clock that's moving seems to experience time more slowly if you ask the clock on the ground. And the other way is if you go up in the air. So imagine instead of an airplane, you had a way to move the clock around the world at on a railroad track that was perfectly smooth. Now height isn't an issue anymore, and it's just speed. And so you can have either motion or speed or a combination of both. If you go higher and faster, like in an airplane, yeah, that's a sort of a doubled up effect. So good observation there. This is,
so really,
go ahead.
So it didn't matter. It wouldn't matter if it was a digital clock or a mechanical, old fashioned clock.
Not at all.
Okay.
Doesn't matter if you're just counting pulse rates and you've got
And what I'm hearing you say is that time is relative. It's exactly related to the circumstances. And then you can turn that around and say if it's relative, then it doesn't really exist.
Yes.
Because anything relative means it doesn't have a basis.
Anything that's relative changes or is capable of change.
Well, that's why it's relative. It's relative. It's relative to circumstances.
Right. We're going around in a circle now. And if it changes, it's experiencing time. If it changes, you perceive it differently than I perceive it.
Absolutely. Right. And like Don was saying, it's sometimes we can perceive time differently for ourselves, completely. I've had the same kind of experience you had, Don, about moving in time. Moving in space and time, it doesn't seem like that's related, but somehow it is. Sometimes feels that way.
Fire away, Ross.
Oh, well, everyone kept saying relative, relative, relative. Einstein's theory of relativity is E, energy equals mass times the speed of light squared.
Which is a very big number.
So he does reference time in that equation. So I won't get into that, but that's the theory of relativity.
We'll come back to that right near the end.
I see.
I think we're dwelling on this a little bit too long because I think
we lost him. Yeah.
Yeah. We need to get back to what time is meant in the course.
Okay. So let's go ahead to the next one. Still text chapter one. Now we're at the 25th paragraph. Don, you haven't read yet. You want to read all of paragraph 25?
Yes, I'll read 25. Miracles are part of an interlocking chain of forgiveness, which, when completed, is the atonement. Atonement works all the time, and in all the dimensions of time.
So now here's another cool idea, and I won't dwell on it too long because we've covered it, but time is not uniform. Time has dimensions. Jesus speaks a little bit later about time being, we think in terms of time being horizontal, linear, and in fact, you can move up and it becomes three-dimensional chess. And that's one of the, dimensions of time. So, and atonement, he's making the point here, is good anyway. Atonement is the undoing of. A is like atom, indivisible. Tone is action. So the undoing of an action, atonement. And that is a miracle process, and it works. Miracles are outside of time and space. So it works all the time and in all the dimensions of time. Next one. Now we jump all the way to paragraph 47. Luann, I think you're up again.
The miracle is a learning device that lessens the need for time. It establishes an out-of-pattern time interval, not under the usual laws of time. In this sense, it is timeless. And that's what I think the levels are about. We use time in each level in a different way. And that means that we're, for me, that means that ultimately there is no such a thing as time. We're just using it until we can get to level number one. When we're at level number one, we don't need miracles anymore.
Right.
And we don't need time anymore.
There's no longer anything changing, no longer anything to correct, no yeah. ignorance to be relieved from, no waking left to do.
Right.
Do you agree?
Okay. So it's that goes along with me, with all the scientific reasons, including Einstein's, in that time is relative. It's just relative. That means it's we make it up and it's related to something else.
There you go.
And the book says over and over, we use it. We use it the way we need to use it in order to understand a miracle, in order to go up a different level. We just use it. We use an idea of time. And when we get to the top level or the second of the top level, we won't need it anymore. It'll just...
So I thought this was really interesting too. So we have the ability to control time. Well, that kind of fits into your story from Don and, Luann, you said, you'd have experience like that. I've had occasional experiences like that. So Ross, you want to rattle that one off for us, 48?
The miracle is the only device at your immediate disposal for controlling time. Only revelation transcends it, having nothing to do with time at all.
So, when it says it's at your immediate disposal, it seems to suggest that you can volitionally use it.
Yeah.
But it seems to contradict miracles not being under our control.
At our beck and call, right, to direct.
How do we make sense of that?
So we're open to the group?
Yeah.
How do we make sense of it? I'm not sure myself.
I think that the miracle lifts you. The miracle is a change of thinking, right? That's what a miracle it does. It changes.
Of experience.
Well, you experience a miracle however you experience it. But basically, it has a way of changing your way of looking at life.
It's a learning device that changes, right?
Yeah, it's a learning device.
Look at life, right.
And it requires time, and that's why that's how you're going to use your time, is by fostering miracles, by doing the book.
And thus lessening the need for time. the need for time to accomplish what? To wake up. Right?
So we're using it to wake up, absolutely. But when we have awakened, we won't need it anymore. So there's no point in even having time if we don't need it anymore.
Well, my question was,
how do we resolve the contradiction?
How do we resolve the what?
Well, there was a statement that I made earlier, at least, that I thought that miracles were not under our volitional control and our beck and call because we're not high enough up the rungs, you know, vertically to look down and see how any particular result is going to be best for you and anybody, you know, involved. Even if my impulse is holy or well-intended, I can still have a partial understanding. And then if I have miracles at my beck and call, I can unintentionally misuse them or perhaps not use them as efficiently as Jesus uses them or something along those lines. Right. And now we've got a sense that says miracle is the only device at your immediate disposal. So maybe we'll give that one to Andrew. He's going to watch the tape. And Andrew, when you're listening, make a note.
I think Ross has his hand up.
He does. Go ahead, Ross.
So the one way, another definition of miracles for me is called a realization. And a realization is like peeling back the layers of an onion. So you're peeling back levels of illusion. So you're controlling time. And let's see, your question, Don, was miracles are under your control or not, right? Is that kind of what you're saying? So you can have a realization by going to the Holy Spirit part of your mind, and it could have to do with anything. All of a sudden, you could realize, wait a minute, I've been duped into thinking that he who dies with the most toys wins. Well, good golly, that's not true at all. So that's a very, you know, low level, I would say, realization, peeling back one level of the illusion and just going, hey, wait a minute. And of course, yeah, that's maybe not under your control, but it's a universal inspiration of, wait a minute, I've been sold a bill of goods here to promote the economy. I don't need more toys. You know, as just one simple example of a realization that's going to radically, and at least in my case, it's going to radically transform my life to realize I don't need more stuff. Even though the government said, oh, here's some stimulus money, go spend it and keep the economy going. It's like, wait a minute, I'm being duped again. So this is one realization. Hopefully we've all gotten way past that and we're way into, you know, special relationships and things like that, where the Holy Spirit, the universal inspiration is coming to us and saying, hey, those relationships you think are so special, they're not. Everybody is the same level of specialness. Oh, well, that's going to change my whole outlook on life. That's a miracle. Inspired by the universal inspiration, so on and so forth.
Don't you think that when you're ready for a miracle, it happens?
And yes.
The book is...
Universal inspiration.
The book is pushing us along to a place where we are ready for a miracle, a change of thinking.
As long as it doesn't promote fear.
It keeps on going. Change of thinking is basically what a miracle is.
Whatever you're ready for without a whole bunch of fear coming in.
Yeah, exactly. So we're not exactly controlling it, but we're not exactly giving up on it either. We're saying when we need a miracle, we all just need to keep on reading and keep on doing until we get one.
Don, perhaps part of the understanding here is I can make a conscious decision to invite miracles to take place in my life. I don't know exactly what form they're going to take or when they're going to occur. I leave that up to Jesus, but I invite them in. and I understand what their function is. They're teaching tools, and they delete the need to spend my entire life accumulating toys just at the moment of death to realize toys don't make for any release from suffering at all.
Well, let me you know, refer back to last week. I did share this, and maybe everybody here has heard it, but that was that experience where I basically invoked one of the Course in Miracles lessons, workbook lessons, where I was having difficulty feeling happy with these kids I was working with, and I could see that I was having separating thoughts. And I said, this I would not look upon. I trust my brothers because I am one with them. And I had that shift, and it was in that sense, I use a device. I gave my mind an opening for a miracle to occur.
You were ready for a miracle to occur.
I was ready for a miracle, and to speak to what Ross says, because what troubles me is that doesn't happen to me all the time, you know, and that it's not. I'm not having miracles. I think the Course says at one point, if you're not experiencing miracles, something's wrong. Well, something's wrong. But what Ross was saying was like peeling, it's like peeling the onion. And so, you know, I had a miracle that demonstrated to me the ephemeral nature of my perceptions, and that just beyond the veil that they create is the experience of happiness and acceptance and inclusion and a sense of being at one or in union with happiness.
You think that opens your mind up for the next miracle to come?
I hope so.
I'm sure it will. Now, the next time you read a lesson and study it, I think you're very possibly have a miracle that will apply to your life.
Yes, yes. You're right, Luann. Thanks for that. I appreciate it.
I like that this mentions here that revelation transcends even the miracle, but that's got nothing to do with time at all. That's purely level one. You're awake. That's revelation. And the Course says, revelation, you know what? We're going to mention it from time to time, but it's outside of the scope of this Course. You know, that's the step that God takes from the lawns of heaven, is that revelation. Let's see. We don't have to read this whole paragraph. Don, do you want to read this? Let's see. The first three sentences, if you would. From paragraph one.
You're muted, Don. Okay.
Thank you. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. Does not mean that I am in any way separate or different from you, except in time. And time does not really exist. The statement is more meaningful in terms of a vertical rather than a horizontal axis. You stand below me, and I stand below God. How much more shall I read?
Stop there. This is Jesus talking.
Yep, this is Jesus talking.
Yeah, and Jesus says to me, and well, to the one of us, in the process of rising up, I am higher because without me, the distance between God and man would be too great for you to encompass. I like the whole thing. Can I just read the whole thing?
Please.
I bridge the distance as an elder brother to you on the one hand, and as a son of God on the other. My devotion to my brothers has placed me in charge of the sonship, which I render complete because I share it. This may appear to contradict the statement, I and my Father are one, but there are two parts to this statement in recognition that the Father is greater.
So Jesus recognizes that the Father is a whole order of magnitude different than what we are. And when I say we, I'm lumping us together with Jesus, which is a pretty bold statement, but he's the one who makes it.
Yes, you know? Yes, he does.
Think of me as your wiser, loving, older brother. And I'm just a little bit further along the illusionary time bar. And don't think of it horizontally, because that doesn't make any sense. Think of it in a different dimension. Think of it vertically. And we got that statement a little early. Read the next one first, too, Don, as long as you're doing it. 6, and... Ooh, read all the way through at least sentence 7.
Who's reading now?
Go ahead, you do it too.
Through sentence 7 or 2?
Including.
The miracle minimizes the need for time. In the longitudinal or horizontal plane, the recognition of equality of the members of the sonship appears to involve almost endless time. However, the miracle entails a sudden shift from horizontal to vertical perception. This introduces an interval from which the giver and receiver both emerge farther along in time than they would otherwise have been. The miracle thus has a unique property of abolishing time to the extent that it renders the interval of time it spans unnecessary. There is no relationship between the time a miracle takes and the time it covers. The miracle substitutes for learning that might have taken thousands of years.
Go ahead, finish it up. Go to the end of 10, please. So it does so by...
It does so by the underlying recognition of perfect equality of giver and receiver on which the miracle rests. The miracle shortens time by collapsing it, thus eliminating certain intervals within it. It does this, however, within the larger temporal sequence.
What do you take away from that?
I have to be with that for a while.
Okay. Anybody else? We've got horizontal and vertical perceptions mentioned. So that's like the third time that idea has been introduced in just the first chapter.
This where it says this introduces an interval from which the giver and receiver both emerge farther along in time, but also the there was something about the equality of the giver and receiver or something like that, and I kind of see how that would be in my experiences with the shifts that I've had. There didn't seem to be a hierarchy between me and there was no comparison.
How about this sentence? The miracle substitutes for learning that might have taken thousands of years. And the course talks briefly somewhere about the subject of reincarnation, and it says, you know what, we're not getting into it because it doesn't matter. If there's only one life, as Christianity teaches, then your job is to do your best with what's in front of you in that life. If you've got multiple lives, like some forms of Buddhism teach, you know what? Your job is to do the best you can with what's in front of you at the present moment. It doesn't change. You're living in the instant. You know, it doesn't. Don't concern yourself with that. It doesn't do anything for you.
Well.
Here's a reference learning that might have taken thousands of years. I don't know about you, but my lifespan is probably going to top out somewhere in the 80s or 90s, you know?
Dr. Day, yeah, you quoted the Christian quote, and I guess one might ask, is there a proper understanding of what life means? In other words, the way we understand it in the Western world is one physical life, but maybe what was really meant by that statement was life as an infinite thing.
I think it does mean infinite.
That's why it kind of reconciles that what we see as a discrepancy between that Christian idea and the more Eastern points of view.
Different cultures, different times, different, concepts. I mean, I don't recall anywhere in the New Testament Jesus saying, hey, we only go around once, so you might as well make the most of it. I mean, I don't think that's, in red.
If you think about it this way, this is a dream realm. We can have this dream. We can have another dream. We can have thousands of dreams, however long it takes us to realize that we're dreaming.
So that's a nice version of it. I like that, too. Ross, you got 2 cents to throw in?
Well, just to add to that, I mean, my old realization was it's as if Gilligan's Island is your lives, plural, right? So you can go through all the episodes. They're all up on the shelf, and you can live each one of them. But why not substitute for learning that might have taken thousands of years? Pull a few of those episodes off the shelf of the scripts you've written and throw them in the trash. You don't need to live them out.
I think that's what miracles are for.
Yeah. Right? You don't need to be Gilligan and then Marianne and then the Skipper and endlessly circling through all these episodes. You can pull the ones you've scripted out and throw them in the trash.
I remember the scriptwriters running out of ideas, and even as a kid, I'm going, oh, man, when, the show starts off with a coconut falling out of a tree and striking Gilligan on the head, and suddenly they're all transported back to the court of King Louis the 14th.
Why not?
Sure.
Right? Your life is a dream. Episode. Why not dream that up?
The miracle minimizes the need for time. That's, right here at the top. And that point is, Jesus is nothing if not redundant. He says the important stuff over and over. I think that's out of an understanding that some of us are slow learners, and our learning speeds up. That's part of the miracle. Different strokes for different folks at different times, different cultures. Don, I think you're right. You have to read into it or keep your mind open to the possibility. What was the message perhaps really about?
I think that the miracle that you had was a way of saying, if I keep my mind on the idea that we are all one, that's going to change my life forever.
Yeah, there's another thing from the course that says basically every encounter is a divine encounter. Everyone we meet is a divine encounter that we somehow are meant to meet that son of God, that one of the sonship, that what seems to be a separate part of the sonship, and join. We have every time we meet somebody or talk to somebody, maybe even on the phone, it's an opportunity to join, to let go of the idea and relate as if we truly are divine friends.
Julia are one.
Yeah. Yes, you could say it that way, of course, too. This past week, we were in the camp, and one of our rituals in the morning was we were in a big circle, and we would, every individual would be greeted with namaste, you know, and then we would namaste back and namaste to the circle. And then she asked us, the teacher was saying, so what do you think that means? And there were the typical responses, but what came to me, not, it actually didn't come to me during it, it came to me later. I thought, you could also say that when I say namaste, I'm saying, I see the divine friend in you. I see the divine friend, you know, that we are in fact divine friends.
I'm not sure about the word friend, but yeah.
Well, that's why you say divine. I mean, because a friend is, you know, a social
concept.
Yeah. But divine friend is like a holy encounter, an encounter with yourself in the form of, you know, in the form of, I just mean it came to me, that's all.
I think you could also say namaste means I see God in you.
Well, that's basically what most people say. The divine in me sees the divine in you, something like that. That's the typical way of that's the concept usually applied to it. I just have this other sense of it.
The friend has an aspect of separation to me, which is why it doesn't work for me. I just figured that out. When I say friend, that means you're not me, and I'm not you. We're separate.
And divine friend is a little bit different concept than that, yeah.
It's a little bit different.
When you're done making your comment, would you read paragraph two?
Are you talking to me?
Yep.
The basic decision of the miracle-minded is not to wait on time any longer than is necessary. Time could waste as well as be wasted. The miracle worker, therefore, accepts the time control factor gladly. He recognizes that every collapse of time brings everyone closer to the ultimate release from time, in which the Son and the Father are one. Now, see, I love that statement because it sounds to me like I am also the Son of the Father, just as Jesus is and just as everybody I see is. We just don't know it yet. And if I could just say, if I could act the way I believe, then I would not have a problem at all, because I would already be ready for God to say, yes, you are my son. You are as I created you. I can say I'm as God created me, but, you know, I don't know how God created me. The only thing I can think of is that God created me as God is, and I don't know what God is completely. It's undefinable, and I won't know what God is until whatever this undefinable God accepts me back into its, I want to say arms, but accepts me back into its energy or back into its love or back into its, as I was created. I don't think I was created as Luann. I don't think I was created as, along with what somebody said one time, I want to say this. For a while, I thought that God was created us in order to know what his creation was. In other words, he couldn't create us. He couldn't know what he could create until he created us and found out. That was my thought about God, but now that's waving around. I'm not quite sure that's right. But it still feels like somehow or another we're his son is an experiment of himself. Like, what can I do? I create myself as my child, and I can figure out what that is. Because in the book, it says so often that God depends on us to come back to him, to it. But if that's true, then we have some value to God.
Oh, we're an extension of God.
But what's the value of that to God?
What's the value of his creations to the Creator?
Exactly.
I think that extension is always associated with divine love, unselfish love. And so for God to increase by extension is in simply in line with his nature, you know, who he is, at least in part, as I'm able to understand it, you know, by definition. God is love, or just God is. And then there's the extension of his love, of his awareness, of his being to his creations. And we are like him, just like, an oak tree drops acorns and they always turn into more oak trees. When God creates, when God extends, it's always just like himself.
Okay.
How could it be any less than that?
Then what do you think our purpose is?
That's a big question.
I think our purpose is to extend for the same reason that God extends.
I like that.
So we have to find ourselves back in God's extension. I think there's only one extension, which means we're not, here's God and he's extending, and these are then extending into what, you know, into a tree, and then these would come out, but I don't think it's like that. I don't think these are ever separate. Does that make sense at all? I think God can extend infinitely and never be separate. There never can be a separate part.
I agree.
Okay. So if the Son of God is his extension, there is something about him still, and when I say him, I hate using human words, but
it's a pronoun. Go ahead.
When God is extending, as God has extended into his Son, I think the sonship is the Son, and Jesus is just saying, and we've already been told that everybody's gone back to that. Everybody now, time is, we're still dreaming, but the thing that we are is no longer dreaming.
The thing we were created as.
Yeah, it's no longer dreaming.
Luann? You were saying what we're here for. I kind of went to a different part of the chapter. It's wholeness and spirit. It's the first paragraph. It says, while you believe you are in a body, you can choose between loveless and miraculous channels of expression. So it sounds, I mean, that sentence says, that's what we're here for, is to extend love,
mm-hmm.
and use the body to extend love. Till we get to the place where we've reached a direct communication, and then the body is not necessary, nor is a miracle.
I think that's absolutely true. When all we do is extend love, then we are no longer needing miracles.
Yeah, I think somehow I'm in a place where I've kind of gotten out of the loop of extending love. I mean, I do it in these instances, but it seems like I need a full-time I need to be in the river, so to speak. I feel like I'm out of the river.
Go back, go to lesson 194, and you can get yourself back in the river real quick.
Thank you. Thanks, Lynn.
So we're almost out of time. I want to take us right to the end here. There's one more idea I wanted to touch base on and get your input on, your feedback.
They had a definition of the purpose of time just a little ways down here. I think that's, there it is.
Luann, that's I place the future in the hands of God.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And then two lessons later, it says, with gratitude. So you can add the words with gratitude. That God's okay. going to take care of our future. We don't need to do it ourselves.
Thank you.
Okay. So one of the final ideas here is that our thoughts have everything to do with how we perceive things, because we will always try to filter in a way that accepts proof that our ideas are right. The ideas we want to be right are right, and we'll reject as untrue or non-existent those things which don't support our thoughts system. And that this is something that Jesus teaches us in the Course, and that there's good evidence for this being true in physics, and then I'll be done with physics. A great demonstration of this idea that what we think has everything to do with what happens. That's how powerful we are as extensions of God. Is about 100 years ago, they developed the ability to fire electrons one at a time out of this electron gun in a laboratory on a table. And the electrons would approach this little wall. And the wall was solid metal and would bounce electrons off, except for two places. There were two little slits, equal distance, you know, from the end. And the thought was, oh, well, if electrons are like little bowling balls, then what will happen is they'll bounce off any place they don't hit a slit. And if they do hit a slit, they'll go through, and there's an electron detector on the far side, and here it is, and you'll just get two neat little lines on the electron detector. It's like a little TV screen. And you'll see electron spikes pile up from where they pass through, and you won't see any electron spikes over here. So that's pretty much proof, you know, hey, electrons are like little bowling balls. Then what they also noticed, however, is that if you weren't sure, if you didn't measure whether the electron went through the left slit or the right slit, you had no idea which. Here's something quite different happened. Instead of behaving like little bowling balls, electrons turn into like waves in water. And that's what these represent, waves. And the electron goes through this slit and this slit. One electron. They can fire one electron at a time. And you get an interference pattern, just like you would see in water. If you put a gate with two slits up, you get exactly the same pattern in water. It's not just subatomic physics. And you get this interference pattern. And it's light, darker, darkest, light. I mean, this is the middle. There shouldn't be anything here at all, right? Completely blank. So now this is proof that electrons are waves. So which one is right? It can't be both, can it? Right? They still haven't gotten a good answer for this one, but here's where I'm going with it. If you know somehow, you have a measurer that tells you left or right slit, then it's always a bowling ball. By observing it, you determine what it becomes. It's both things until you observe it. and just your being there and going, aha, left side, or aha, right, makes it so. That's the power of your observation, right? Here's a second, a little more complicated version of that. There was this guy, another German again, 1930s, Erwin Schrödinger, and he had a thought experiment. Said, put a cat in a box and put some radioactive material in a box, and a Geiger counter detector and a vial of radioactive liquid. And there's like, in a given amount of time, a 50-50 chance that a radioactive atom will decay. You can't predict whether it will happen or not. It's even odds. And if it does decay, the Geiger counter pulls a string and breaks this vial of poison, and the cat dies. And you don't know which way it went, but after the amount of time, you open the box and you either see the cat died because the vial was broken because the radioactive atom decayed, or the cat's alive. Now, it's both ways at the same time until somebody opens the box and looks. And this is called the Schrödinger's cat paradox. I don't know why they have to kill the cat. It's just a thought experiment. Why not just like make it sleeping gas or something? You know, it seems a little kinder. But the point, again, is that your observing it changes what happens. Is it this or is it that? It depends on you. This is level two stuff, okay? And so there is nothing that you can observe that is unchanged after you observe it. Nothing that you see or perceive is the same as it was before you perceived it. Just your becoming aware of it and having been a level two perception changed its essence. And that's a kind of an interesting thought to support what Course in Miracles says too. We're at midnight, so we can quit any time. That's just the note I want to close on. The power of our own minds. And Luann, that goes to what you were saying. Are we extensions of the mind of God? If so, our thoughts are very powerful.
Thank you, Dr. Day.
Much fun. I'm sorry we lost a couple people. I got off to a rough start my first time doing this. Ross is much more accomplished and polished than I am. One day I hope to catch up.
I fake it.
Let me cut off the chair here and just be normal again.
I faith it till I make it.
I thought a lot of good stuff happened during your time. Good interchange and learning. I appreciate it. Thank you.
That makes me feel better.
Nice. Yeah. That was really good.
If you guys got value out of it, then I got value out of it.
I got value.
Yep, me too. And you know, you should be getting value because you get what you gave.
Yeah. That's right.
Thank you,
guys. Have a great weekend. And we'll be back to our fearless leader next week, I'm sure.